afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it's Tuesday, as Dave always joins us on Tuesday, July 19th, 2022. Howdy, Dave.
Hey, Melody, and happy National Daiquiri Day. Can you believe it?
They actually have a day for daiquiris.
Yes, they do.
I guess they had to come up with something.
Get out your blenders. But hey, on this date, way long ago, back in 1799, during Napoleon's Egyptian campaign, French soldier discovered a black basalt slab inscribed with ancient writing near the town of Rosetta. The irregularly shaped stone contained fragments of passages written in three different scripts, Greek, Egyptian hieroglyphics, and Egyptian Demotic. Well, the ancient Greek on the Rosetta Stone told archaeologists that it was inscribed by priests honoring the king of Egypt, Ptolemy V, in the 2nd century B.C. Well, even more, the Greek passage announced that the three scripts were all of identical meaning. The artifact thus held the key to solving the riddle of hieroglyphics, a written language that had been dead for nearly 2,000 years. Mm-hmm. The Rosetta Stone now has new meaning, and now you know.
Interesting. Rosetta Stone. And that's a new way to... I bought that when I was trying to learn Italian before I went to Italy.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Did it work?
No. Ciao.
Ciao, baby.
But I think it did it. You know, you got to pick up kind of new little phrases and so forth, and how to order a sandwich and ask to go where the restrooms were. But that was pretty much it. So, and today is Ruby's birthday.
Hey, Ruby.
My little doggie's birthday. It's her birthday. So, actually, she was born on my uncle's birthday, July 19th. But let's go ahead now, and you have my history there, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go ahead and see what's going on with gold. I know that's what you're interested in. Well, we did have an up day, and, you know, hey, we'll take it, but $2, $1,713. Silver was up 4 pennies at $1,884. Platinum was up $8 at $884. And palladium was up 13 at $1,945. And you have the USDX was down once again, down 0.74 at 106.69. Crude oil was up 1.36 at 103.96. And the Dow today rallied more than 700 points. And as traders are beginning to bet that the bottom is in, so they think. And so we had the Dow up 754 points, 31,827. The S&P up 105 at 3,936. The NASDAQ up 353, 11,713. We always hit a bottom when the numbers are higher. And we're always going lower when the numbers are negative. So, you know, it just is. Asian markets, Hang Seng was lower, rest was green. Europe, hey, they like what's going on too. Everything's all green. Not quite sure what really is pushing these numbers higher. Again, it's just a breath of air from somebody's lips that has probably mentioned something that everybody is feeling positive. Well, the 10-year yield is over 3.019. Let that stay above 3% for a week, and let's see where the markets are at. Oil, let's see, gas had a little pressure, probably a little bit of profit taking, 7.34, just down a little under 2%. And Brent was up just a little under 1% at 107.28. So that's pretty it, as they say, in a nutshell, I believe is what they say. correct me if I'm wrong, Dave. All's good in a nutshell. But, I mean, you know, the stocks rallied today. You know, we looked at all, you know, the Dow was up 500 and some points just this morning. And, everyone is looking at the latest round of earning reports. You know, everybody thinks that no recession, or maybe it's going to be better in the second quarter. And, even though we see these recession concerns still persist, even bank stocks outperformed expectations, you know, yada, yada, yada. It's all pretty much the same thing. Hasbro shares climbed 2%. Everybody beats their earnings. You know, the analyst comes out with low expectations. Just, I mean, it's such a rigged market. It's just laughable, Dave, you know? It's just such a joke. But, it does what it does, and it keeps Wall Street investors happy, Dave.
Well, that it tries its best to do. I mean, all sorts of companies are down. I mean, although you have shares of Netflix, it popped 3% above of that company's earnings report scheduled for after the close today. And
yeah, well, they've only lost one almost 70%, so what's 3% to the upside?
Yeah, I know. And then you're gonna have Tesla and some of the airlines, Twitter, see how they fare with Musk's on again off again purchase. And then you also have Verizon. You've J&J, Johnson & Johnson, going lower after that giant cut its full-year revenue and profit guidance. IBM shares down 6%. But here's the thing, in the big picture, so far roughly 9% of S&P 500 companies have reported second quarter earnings. And of those, about two-thirds have actually beaten analyst expectations, which all told is kind of surprising. But I think one of the things we'll see when GDP numbers come out at the end of next week is that once again, Wall Street is not the same as Main Street. The stock market is not the real economy. I think we'll see, however, the second quarter earnings end up. That, you know, and this is all the big mega bank performances aside, which weren't that hot last week anyway, even if they've turned around for a couple of them yesterday and today, that the economy as a whole is just nowhere related to how these big, largely multinational companies are doing, Melody.
Well, you know, 9% of the S&P 500, you know, so they only report and they only bring forth the news, the ones that did beat their expectations. And again, it's, you know, it's so manipulated. It really is a joke how it's so controlled, manipulated by, you know, anyway, the listeners know how I feel. Wall Street. But it just fakes, and you're right, it just fakes of what is truly going on. And but everybody believes that Wall Street is the economy, and it isn't. And there's people out there that are having troubles. You know, it truly is just such a joke anymore. And but hey, there's lots of money there. And it doesn't even matter if you got felonies against you or anything like that. These banks, they're the ones that, you know, control most of it anyway. And, you know, they all come out with, you know, their second quarter earnings. And what cracks me up is the bank painted a picture of consumer in much better shape than before the pandemic or the Great Recession. Well, really? Really? So I don't know, Dave. It just, it's just surprising. And, you know, which bank last week had the, was it JP Morgan that went down 28% or something like that?
Yepers.
You know, so I can't imagine why one, like Bank of America, would be so much different than all the other ones. But go ahead.
Oh, well,
we remember Bank of America as the bank that, 14 years ago, bought the subprime lending mortgage company, Countrywide Financial. They regretted that decision for a long time. CEO
but that was with the help of Warren Buffett too. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's right. You're right.
After they cut the Keystone Pipeline, so they could pump, so he could use his train business, his train rails to move the oil. Anyway, go ahead. I digress. Go ahead.
Oh no, that's important perspective. Anyway, the bank's CEO Brian Moynihan said during last week's earnings call that a series of strategies that they made adopted to make sure the next economic downturn doesn't lead to a near calamity has put them in a better position. For example, he says that the bank now holds $29 billion less of mortgage loans than it did at the great height of the Great Recession. That's despite a doubling in the price of the median house since then. And the bank's home equity loan portfolio, that which was blamed for a number of banks' problems with overextended, underqualified consumers, is only $27 billion. And they say that's down from $154 billion. But... it's spin time, Melody, which is what these earnings calls are all about. If the numbers aren't good and don't look good ahead, these CEOs, CFOs find a way to make them look better, to bring in, essentially seduce these Wall Street analysts, getting behind them, the question I've always asked at this time is, who's looking out for the consumers? Too many of these analysts, I'm coming to see, and they're not necessarily in the hip pocket of these banks and
they are.
And other companies.
Absolutely.
They don't get paid by them.
Well, they get paid.
Is what I meant. But they're, I question their objectivity, nevertheless.
Well, they get paid, maybe not directly, but they still get paid. You know, it all benefits them. So somehow, some way, they become very wealthy based on their relationships with these various firms and banks and so forth. And they all got to work together, make each other more powerful, more wealthier. And they're the ones, the banks are the ones that cause all the problems they have throughout history. It's always the banking industry that causes all the problems. And, the U.S. citizen gets to, not all the way back, but, for the past how many years, the U.S. citizen gets to bail everybody out. That's what we've become accustomed to, so who cares? And it's really kind of, it truly is amazing that they're allowed to get away with it. It truly is amazing. It's amazing that down in Louisiana you have homeowners that they're going to lose their insurance over $40,000. We've had the hurricane season, and it goes into effect in June, I believe, but the biggest part of the hurricane season is still, a month or so away. More than 40,000 homeowners are looking for new insurance policies after an insurance company dropped them. But this is following other moves by two other companies. Southern Fidelity canceled 42,000 policies Friday, leaving Louisiana homeowners only 60 days to find new coverage. So that brings the number of policies dropped since June to nearly 100,000 by Southern Fidelity, Lighthouse, Excalibur, and Mason. The state insurance commissioner, Jim Donilon, said six companies have pulled out of the state completely, and more than 50 have stopped writing new policies below Interstate 10 and I-12, making the state insurers of last resort Louisiana citizens the only option for most. Well, they got the federal flood insurance for that part, Dave.
Yeah, I am having some technical difficulty. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Oh, good, good. Well, the thing is, now Southern Fidelity customers have until just September 13th to find a new policy or sign with Citizens. Lighthouse, Excalibur, and Maison have until August 28th. Now, since the cancellations, Donilon said the number of Louisiana Citizens policies has jumped from 35,000 to 82,000, and he expects it to grow to 95,000. Still, many of these homeowners with canceled policies have said the Citizens quotes they're getting are simply unaffordable. One Lafitte resident was quoted $41,000.
And how big was the house?
What's that?
How big was the house?
It didn't say.
Yeah,
it didn't say.
Probably a really big one.
You know, even if it was 5,000 square feet, that's a big price tag. But, you know, here's the thing. I mean, you've said this before, that most, and maybe the vast majority, but a lot of these folks knew what they were getting into when they build a house, you know, near a bayou on the coast, in the path of hurricanes every 3 or 4 months out of the year. And this is a doggone shame, I'm sure, a source of stress for many of these families, and certainly have no sympathy for a lot of these insurance companies. But then again, I wonder how many of these folks are getting really what they asked for.
Well, we're getting our break. We didn't ask for it, but we're getting it. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter and blog that comes out on Friday. And just finishing up this, you know, Dave, it's, you know, these insurance companies move out and these residents are told that they need to build bigger or not, I don't know, higher and stronger. But what happens is those that can't, they're going to be priced out of their homes. So then these homes that are on the waterways and so forth that have been there for, you know, for a really long time, they have to be sold, and then they get sold to the wealthy, and the wealthy comes in and, you know, buys up the properties and build their bigger and newer homes. And it doesn't matter if it gets flooded out and so forth. They'll have the money to rebuild and so and whatnot. But, you know, there was one that you reported on. Not only was it 41,000, but there was another one that in a New Orleans neighborhood at 15,000 for a renewal cost. Who can afford $15,000? That's probably like on a 5,000 square foot home. 15,000. I mean, are you kidding me? Well, so what are you going to do? So put that $15,000 in a, you know, in gold every year. And if you have a loss, then you can pay for it on your own. So, but anyway, we have housing. Talking about housing, that's down. Let's see if I can find these numbers right here. Builders started work on 8% fewer homes in June than in May. This is from the Census Bureau. Overall housing starts, buoyed by strong apartment construction, that fell 2%. The number of permits issued fell 0.6%. So the Fed's rate hikes to date have sent mortgage rates surging, and of course, would-be home buyers' wealth falling. That is helping to suppress demand for new houses, and of course, that is part of the goal. But on the other hand, home builders' confidence has plunged, making builders wary of constructing more single-family homes that may not sell at high enough prices. But again, they are playing a dangerous game, and it's not going to turn out the way they're anticipating. You're going to stop the demand for these houses and everything else, and it's just not going to, it's not only going to drop prices, and they might use that as an inflation type. Oh, inflation is coming down. Look at all the hard work that we're doing, and we're making sure that, you know, we're out there for the American people, as this is an election year. But the real thing's food, energy. How low does it, you know? What is a good drop in inflation rates, Dave?
Some might say any, and others would say, well, any amount is not enough. What do they say? The truth lies somewhere in between. I don't know, but... I mean, you see that June single-family housing starts dip below 1 million for the first time since a couple of years ago, the early parts of 2020. You got an earnings call last month. Executives at home builder Lennar described cooling housing demand this way. Given the Fed's expressed conviction to combat inflation by the statements made recently, it seems that these trends will harden as the Fed continues to tighten until inflation subsides. So the CEO, actually I think he's their chair, said that while we can choose to fight against this trend, the reality is the market has been changing, and people are trying to get ahead of it by making all the necessary adjustments. So it's certainly, whether it's cyclical, whether it's structural, things are happening now pretty quickly in the housing market, and builders are not happy campers. Whatever they may be building, Melody, single families, multifamilies, apartments, commercial properties, rising rates are going to put a damper, certainly, on prices. And you know, when you have builders just walking away from unfinished jobs, makes for an interesting situation in a very visible, important industry in America.
And the thing of the eventually, you're just going to have the Fed lowering rates because they're going to bring that rate right back down.
That's exactly right.
I mean, we know their game plan. We know what they're going to do. And unless they truly want this economy to, and we've got debt too great to be paid, and they're ready to default, then they'll let everything crash. So we just don't know if they're ready for that or not. But so they are between a rock. They're not going to be able to, their terminology, soft landing on bringing this inflation down. Inflation is here to stay. It's not going up. Hey, it might, what, where are we, 9.1? It might go to 8.1 maybe. Even if we went into 7, it's still extremely high. So, but that's how they'll use it. Oh, look at all this great inflation numbers are coming down, and you know, but they're rigged. I mean, the higher, the stronger dollar. Okay, it's the things are just all adjusted to make these short term. These are short term fixes. They're not long. It's not going to improve things. It's not going to help people, you know, in the future, in the near future. These are all short term adjustments because this is all they have. This is all they've got. And how long they can keep doing these short term fixes, don't know. But it's questionable. It shouldn't be for, can't be for very long. But, you know, we all knew this was coming, Dave, as far as Russia threatens to send last gas to Europe. I mean, it was pretty much written on the wall. I don't think anybody's really surprised by this. But Russia's energy giant is threatening to send less gas to Europe. But Germany, one of its main importers, has rejected the idea. Yesterday, majority Russia state-owned, we talked a little bit about this yesterday, owned Gazprom said that due to unforeseeable circumstances, it is not in a position to comply with gas contracts in Europe. Surprise! Germany's energy firm Uniper confirmed that Gazprom had claimed force majeure on its supplies. Force majeure, or an act of God, is a legal term and occurs when unforeseeable circumstances prevent one party from fulfilling its contractual duties, in theory, absolving them from any types of penalties. We consider this an unjustified and have formally rejected the force majeure claim. Lucas Wintgens, he's the spokesperson for the Uniper company. Another German energy company confirmed that it had also received a force majeure notice from Gazprom, and that was RWE. So you've got these officials in Germany and in other places in Europe that, you know, of course they've become increasingly concerned about the possibility of a complete shutdown of gas supply. So again, Dave, this is really no big surprise. It shouldn't have been to anybody.
Well, it shouldn't have been, but apparently some are taking the position that it is. As we talked about the other week on this program, Gazprom shut down its Nord Stream 1 pipeline earlier in the month for maintenance work. At that point, we talked about a number of countries doubting that flows would be fully restored after the work is finished, scheduled for the end of this week. European nations get about 40% of their natural gas imports from Russia, or at least before. That's what they were getting before the Ukrainian war started. And, of course, European nations have been scrambling to end or significantly reduce their dependency on Russian oil and gas. But as they've been finding, it's certainly a very costly process for their consumers and extremely, extremely hard, nearly impossible to achieve in the short span they've had since these events unfolded. But the European Commission has announced new gas deals with the U.S. and to a lesser extent Azerbaijan.
Yeah, I'd like to see those new gas deals, the details in them.
Yeah, I actually looked them up and couldn't find it.
Yeah.
So I just have to dig a little bit deeper.
So that means Azerbaijan probably has a better gas deal than the U.S. does, or, you know, we're pumping more to them than what we could do for here at home. It doesn't make sense. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's really all I have to say. We're just the prices there have soared as a result of these lower Russian flows, but higher prices mean that Russia can send less gas to Europe and make the same, and possibly even more money than before. And that's not making a lot of Westerners, Western nations especially, happy at this point, particularly as the war goes on.
Well, I don't usually agree with China, you know, knowing who they are and what they are, especially, you know, the government anyway. And I don't blame them. They're going to take a forceful measure if Nancy Pelosi visits Taiwan after it was reported she would go to Taiwan next month. And they're also going to visit Indonesia, Japan, Malaysia, Singapore, and, of course, spend time in Hawaii. Why not? At the headquarters of the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command. This was all according to the Financial Times. State Department didn't immediately respond for comment. And Taiwan's foreign ministry said it has not received relevant information about any visit. So nobody confirms or denies that it's going to happen and so forth. And, you know, stay home. You know, there's a lot of things going on over here that, or, you know, maybe it would be better that they all went. Who knows? But anyway, get them out of here. Anyway, that's, I don't know. China didn't exactly say what they would do, other than it would take forceful measures. So I'm not quite sure. It's not like she has any power to do anything. So, she's just going over there to the rile the rebels. I don't know, but
yeah, don't know what
I don't know what their point is going over there.
Don't know what to add to it. I mean, you know, they could send mainland China could send more of their jets across the strait as a show of force, as they've done. In fact, they did it after Republican Rick Scott, Senator Rick Scott from South Carolina. No, see, yeah, member of the Senate Armed Services Committee visited Taipei earlier this month. So you know, more rat-a-tat-tat, hollow as it may be, just wasting a lot of breath.
Taxpayers' money.
More hot air, Melody, is just warming this climate beyond our tolerance.
You know, it just makes you, anyway. You know, here's another classic. You picked some classics out today, Dave.
I thought, you know, three is, once again, three times a charm.
You know, here we go. We got Yellen, Janet Yellen. Everybody knows she's his Treasury Secretary, but, you know, she's trying to work on a plan to limit Russia's oil revenue. And, she found the time during a three-stop Eastern Asian tour to promote the administration's approach to reshaping global supply chains. The concept, which Yellen touted in Tokyo last week and again today in Seoul, aims to strengthen trade relationships among trusted allies to make supply lines more resistant to political manipulation. Now, this is a friend shoring. Dave, it warms my heart.
Friend shoring.
Friend shoring. I mean, really? Yes. I mean, all of these people are way too old to be doing in these positions that they're in. Friend shoring is about deepening relationships, get my violin out, and diversifying our supply chains with a greater number of trusted partners to lower risks for our economy and theirs. That's what Yellen said in a speech at a liquid gas research and development facility. I don't know what she'd be doing to a liquid gas research and development, but hey. Now, there was time before the pandemic when the U.S. chain supply policy was parceled out to the Transportation Department, Commerce, or the Federal Maritime Commission. Now it's part of the Treasury's portfolio. And now they get to say how key the nation's logistics system is to the domestic economy, beltway politics, and global competitiveness. And friendshoring, I like that. And then I'm saying that sarcastically,
I do too.
Of course. Friendshoring.
I love friendshoring.
How kind.
We believe very strongly in visiting our friends at the shore. I commit we will continue to do so. But, you know, the perspective here is that our trade with countries that aren't free or partly free, which peaked at close to 20% in 2020, has a...
Hey, how about bringing some of this trade back into our own borders, like building factories and bringing the jobs back here? That way we wouldn't have to worry about friendshoring. Bring that back. But they won't. We'll be right back. We will be back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TruthAndEducationRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of clients, this final segment. She's at 1-800-375-4188. Here's a story that bugged my craw. Considering the impact of inflation, we know consumers are already spending more on back-to-school supplies and then some, as retailers pass along credit card fees in the form of higher prices. This year, total back-to-school spending is expected to match last year's record high of $37 billion, according to the National Retail Federation. The so-called swipe fees that banks charge merchants to process our credit card transactions could total $2.5 billion during the peak shopping season. Doug Kanner, who's general counsel at the National Association of Convenience Stores, says that these fees have been soaring for years but are particularly burdensome when families are hit with a high inflation that's weakened buying power this year. Swipe fees, which are charged to merchants each time a customer uses their card, have long been a point of contention for retailers. Typically, banks and credit card companies charge at least 2% of the transaction on average every time a credit card is used to make a purchase. Now, with profit margins strained and going to get strainier, shall we say, retailers are passing most, if not all, of that cost on to their customers. Kanner notes that swipe fees are a hidden tax on almost everything Americans buy, regardless of whether they pay with cards or cash. The consumer use of credit and debit cards actually saves merchants money, according to Jeff Tassi, who chairs the Electronic Payments Coalition. He says electronic payments are four times cheaper for merchants to process than cash. According to the big box retailers' own consultants, credit and debit card payments will save them over $7.5 billion on back-to-school shopping this year. Still, swipe fees, also known as interchange fees, jumped 25% last year to a record $138 billion for credit and debit cards combined. That's more than double the rate over the past decade. So while when the National Retail Federation first started tracking these swipe fees collected by Visa and MasterCard back in 2001, they amounted to just $20 billion. However, these electronic payments also became essential in keeping businesses open during the pandemic, according to the industry. There have been a significant decrease in cash usage over the past few years, but now most transactions are cashless. Ted Rossman, who is at creditcards.com, says it's just one of the costs of doing businesses. And he added, I would argue that they bring benefits for retailers, too, citing data that consumers spend more money when they make purchases on a credit card instead of using cash. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Now, as the pandemic approaches the 2.5-year mark, the evolving new economic normal is shaping up differently for men and women. turns out, and it's no surprise, I'm sure, women have borne more of the initial brunt of the pandemic's economic damage. Between February and April 2020, female workers lost a total of 13.5 million jobs while posting a net reduction of 1.5 million more jobs than men. These losses were rooted in the pandemic's powerful shocks to both demand for and supply of labor. It exists to this day. I mean, sectors that predominantly employ women, like food service and leisure and hospitality, we know, were just devastated. At the same time, factors like finding childcare pushed many more women out of the labor force, thus draining labor supply all across the country. And as the acute phase of the pandemic has now waned, looking for a piece of wood to knock on, excuse me. You know, the economic recovery has, or the rebound, I should say, has been up, down, and all around. However, gender differences are pronounced in this particular rebound, and women's share of employment remains well below its February 2020 level. What's more, work experience and paychecks lost during the pandemic have not been recouped. It's not as if women had achieved equality before the pandemic. I mean, some kind of gender pay gap has persisted for decades, according to many economists, and women's labor force participation has always lagged men's. Labor force participation, again, is defined as holding a job or actively searching for one. The pandemic's economic damage was indeed vast, but it was particularly stark in industries that employ women disproportionately. For example, jobs in education and healthcare services were over 75% for women, or occupied by women in March 2020, tumbled over 11% in February to April 2020 alone. By contrast, trade, transportation, warehousing, where less than 30% of workers were women, fell by 8% over the same period. Still significantly, but that's when you compare 8 to 11, that's a significant difference. In any event, this sectoral unevenness just reflects pandemic's nature. I mean, service jobs, particularly at the lower end of the wage spectrum, often require some face-to-face interaction, and women who are disproportionately represented in lower paying and part-time jobs saw this unevenness in their jobless rate. Men's unemployment increased nearly fourfold from February to April 2020, while women's jumped fivefold, peaking, I think, in April 2020. Anyway, in all, women, especially those with children, were stretched to the brink. Some were pulling double duty, some triple duty, while working simultaneously. They were providing child care, others finding themselves jobless. Women who left the labor market missed out on months of jobs, job experience and paychecks. And that likely will weigh on these gender disparities for years to come. Now, on the plus side, the shift to remote work and more flexibility for workers seems here to stay to some extent, and has been beneficial to virtually all working parents. Now, our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. In addition to Food for Thought from Wendy Wilson and Doug Nolan's weekly Credit Bubble Bulletin blog, Melody's Market Recap for last week, I have an article on Easy Money. One of his lesser known songs called Easy Money. Singer-songwriter Billy Joel writes, "I want the easy, easy money. I could get lucky. Things could go right. I want the easy, easy money. Maybe just this time, maybe tonight." Well, things aren't so easy these days for the too big to fail banks whose financial shenanigans are coming home to roost, or did so in the second quarter anyway. I mean, profits at mega Wall Street banks took a nosedive in the second quarter as easy money policies that made the pandemic era a boom time in lower Manhattan are coming to a close. The latest earnings report show that Goldman Sachs and Bank of America, as we mentioned earlier, earned smaller profits than a year ago. Ditto for Wells Fargo, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Morgan Stanley, whose profits were way down, the mid to upper 20 percentages. Free money on Wall Street, a side effect of the so-called emergency monetary policies the Fed implemented to keep the pandemic from imploding the economy, has been winding down over the last few months. The Fed started cutting interest rates in March 2020, slashing them to virtually 0%, and began printing trillions of dollars and pumping them into financial markets, if not the economy as a whole. And as Matt Phillips points out, that turbocharged Wall Street, driving public stock offerings and corporate bond sales and advising and financing big mergers and acquisitions, not to mention operating hyperactive trading desks. Bank stocks themselves surged too. In a year after the stock market hit bottom in March 2020, Morgan Stanley was up 200%, Goldman Sachs up 150%, while Bank of America and Citigroup over 100%. By contrast, the S&P grew as a whole by a measly 75% over that same period. Now, fast forward to 2022. Interest rates have begun to take off, rapidly changing the conditions in financial markets and slowing down business in this, well, I'm not sure we're there yet, but we'll still call it a new normal. High rates have been crushing stock prices of late and pushing the S&P into bear territory. And now companies are getting antsy about what new business to write in a down economy. The business of managing new corporate bond sales is also sagging as interest rates rise, with companies not wanting to borrow at the new outrageously high rates of 2 to 3%. And as Philip notes, higher borrowing costs, which the Fed is using to try to ease inflation, also increases the risk of recession. And the losses on loans that normally occur during downturns. So banks, it appears, will be socking away billions in reserves in case things get ugly, which hurt their earnings. But it's not all bad on Wall Street. In fact, volatility can be good for bank trading desks that make the right calls anyway. Trading was a bright spot for Goldman and Citi this last quarter. Bank of America too, the interest they can charge. But overall, higher interest rates in the months ahead mean tighter margins for the big banks, stagnant dividend payments, less share buybacks, and just more circumspect credit for the rest of us. Could it get worse? Well, yes, it could. In a word, think recession. A recession would be worse than the inflation the U.S. is seeing now, which is actually showing signs of slowing down. The Fed has been hiking interest rates and is expected to pile on next week, whether it's 0.75% or 1% percentage point more. It's coming. But of course, that runs the risk of triggering a downturn. And at this point, that cure might be worse than the illness that Jerome Powell is treating. Yet Josh Bivens of the Economic Policy Institute says the data are saying we have time to be flexible. Don't rush into it, Fed. High inflation, the government reported for June, yes, freaked a lot of people out. But energy prices mostly drove the surge. And this month, gas prices have fallen at their fastest rate since the pandemic. And other commodity prices are down from their recent highs, too. For example, lumber. Meanwhile, inflation expectations from consumers and businesses are actually receding. Economist Dean Baker at the Center for Economic and Policy Research believes there are a lot of reasons for believing that inflation has peaked. With inflation, he points out, there are actually winners and losers. One person's cost is another person's income. Just look at the oil companies and their profits. Rents and home prices go up. Landlords and sellers make out. Tenants and buyers, well, not so much. Bivens, who usually sides with labor, doesn't like how this redistributes wealth, but a recession would have worse redistributional consequences. In fact, in a recession, everybody loses, not just, say, those who lose their job, and there will be many of them. Even if you're lucky enough to not be laid off, pay raises will go poof. The career ladder breaks down. In short, the economy will be worse off. Hey, that's the end of today's program. I return on Thursday. Melody Farm with Bob Carrier. Thanks always to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye. If I got me a wealthy man.